Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. 4 minutes after the hour, and I am melting my throat lozenge with coffee this morning, trying to get the day started. So glad you're with me this morning. I want to start with a passage out of Isaiah chapter 1, starting in 18. Come now, let us settle the matter. Let's just stop there for a minute. How often are matters settled? How often are matters in your life settled? It seems kind of rare, doesn't it? It seems like there's always an ongoing issue, concern. So often, we have something that is constantly in a work in progress, kind of like us, under construction. And God says, let's settle the matter, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are as red as crimson, they shall be like wool. If you are willing and obedient, you will eat the good things of the land. But if you resist and rebel, you will be devoured by the sword, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. I just love the idea that God says, let's settle this matter. I like a settle. I like a matter being settled. I think I'll talk to Patrick about that just for briefly, and then we'll move on to some of the news of the day as well. We got a great first hour coming up. Patrick Albanese is going to be with us. And then after that, I think it's Dr. Adam Carrington. And he's going to have lots of things to tell us about the commencement address at Hillsdale. Vice President Mike Pence was the guest speaker, so maybe Mike got a selfie with Adam, because that's what Mike would want, is a selfie with Adam, not the other way around. So let's take a break. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll get our day started with Patrick Albanese. Be back in a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
It's 7 minutes after the hour. Nice to have you with me this morning. It is Monday morning, and Patrick Albanese is my regular guest from prestigious West Des Moines. Good morning, Patrick.
I'm a regular guy.
You're a regular guy.
See, well, I take plenty of fiber.
So does autocorrect get you in trouble from time to time?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Well, let me just, I'm going somewhere with this story. President Trump was welcoming his wife, Melania, home from the hospital and, tweeted it out. And he spelled Melania's name Melanie. So that sounds to me like it was probably an autocorrect.
Yeah. I think if you probably go to your own phone and type in Melania, it'll automatically correct it to Melanie because it's the more common name. It drives me crazy, too, because I don't know why I don't take the 13 seconds it would take to recheck my tweets and messages and say, oh, my goodness.
What did I just
you
say?
Know, yeah, like I think I was trying to send you a text once, and I type in "Hey Bill," and you would think Bill would be something that it would just accept, but unbeknownst to me, it had you might remember this message. It auto-corrected your name to "You complete and utter moron." I don't know. It just auto-correct. I don't know why it did.
That was a little harsh. I didn't know it would do that, but.
Yeah, but I'm not saying I'm making that up to try and excuse what appeared to have been written by my hand. That was autocorrect.
Right.
So, I think we can still be friends. We can still be friends. That was not me.
Right. So 30 million Americans watched the royal wedding on Saturday. You and I were not two of them.
Oh, gosh, they got married. That's fantastic. I don't get it.
Whatever.
Look, it's entertainment. So it's probably not the first time in history that a person who is incredibly well-to-do, by virtue of his birthright, marries somebody who's amazingly attractive due to her birthright. I mean, it kind of happens all the time, but yeah. It's pretty neat. You know, I think it was a Prince Charles just sitting up there saying, "It's just never going to happen for me, is it? Never going to happen." They just keep bringing more people in between me and that chair.
All right. Now, as I was looking over the news over the weekend, a story that's gotten a fairly big head of foam on the top of the cup is this Starbucks story where they are now saying we are going to allow anyone in to use the bathroom at Starbucks, whether they make a purchase or not. Now, it seems that selling high-priced coffee at a place that doubles as a homeless shelter is not a very clever business model.
It isn't. I can only assume that some accountant somewhere said, look, we'll lose a lot of money doing this. But we've compared it to the amount of money we'd lose via lawsuits with our old policy. And this is the cheaper route. You know, it's kind of like, remember the Ford Pinto?
Yeah.
You know, part of the discovery process, as I understand it, was that they were aware of the problem, but they figured it was just cheaper to pay out a bunch of lawsuits to people who were killed or, you know, maimed in an exploding car than it was to actually re-engineer the car and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of did the math and said, well, you know, yeah, some people are going to die, but it's cheaper to pay some lawsuits than to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go that'll besmirch you a little bit. So you wonder, is this just a virtue signal of the highest order? Look at us, you know, everybody's welcome here. Or did they just do the math and say, oh, we got to make these lawsuits. We're going to get a bunch of lawsuits because everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon here and say, hey, they did that to me too. And it turns out, you know, that I'm whatever group, you know, I'm Lithuanian and they hate Lithuanians at Starbucks.
Well, it is going to
take true, by the way. It's true.
it is going to take some pressure off public libraries because it seems that people that don't have a place to live oftentimes go there to use the bathroom. But I don't know if it seems like a good idea if you're a Christian business person. Is this a good business practice? Is this imitating Christ or is this bad for business? I mean, if there's going to be people going in who aren't customers, who aren't going to buy your product, who, when they start making the bathrooms messier and there's a greater need to clean them and more essentials being used in the bathroom, who pays for that? Probably the customers that come in and want to buy coffee.
Well, I don't think it's hard to, you know, say that that's what had happened. I remember the town that I used to live in California when they really eased up on moving, I don't know if you would just say homeless people, but we had a lot of illegal aliens. A friend of mine had a shop right next to a Home Depot. And so you would have a lot of the day laborers that would hang out there. And, you know, he'd come out and there'd be graffiti on his building, which the city, by the way, gave him 3 days to clean up or he'd be charged.
Mm-hmm.
Going, hey, there's graffiti on your building. How dare you as a business owner allow that to happen? It's like, you guys did, you know, but there'd be needles and all kinds of things were going on in his area because they just got very lax about it. So, you know, you wonder if the opportunists might say, hey, Starbucks is the place to hang out because, you know, and eventually they'll probably even give you a free cup of coffee because when other customers start to complain, you know, they might say, well, give the guy a cup of coffee. That'll make him look legit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that old thing where, you know, people used to walk down the street talking to themselves and then the hands-free headset device was invented and we don't think anybody's crazy anymore. We just think they're talking to somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting. I'm curious to see what's going to happen because if I go to a Starbucks in suburbia, it's different than if you're in a very busy city. And maybe you step into a Starbucks because you want to get a cup of coffee, you want to be a paying customer, you want to maybe use their bathroom. That seems to be just the way you do life and business. But if you actually say everyone's welcome, you don't have to buy anything, and you want to get out of the hot or get out of the cold or get out of the rain, and you're just going to occupy space and take up space that paying customers would like to use, that just seems like an odd business model.
Well, I'm also, and this is probably your concern as well as mine more than anything else, that many people on the Wi-Fi is going to slow down my reception, and I am not acceptable of that. No, yeah, that's another thing. Don't forget, they're throwing free Wi-Fi in there.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, as it is, they claim they've had a problem with the people that would come in and only buy a single cup of coffee. They still bought a product.
Right.
But that used to be the complaints, like, oh, these guys, they come in here, they buy one cup of coffee, and then they sit here for 2 hours on their computer, you know, writing the next great American novel.
Right.
It's like, well, at least that guy's bought a cup of coffee.
Right.
And at your prices, that should keep you open for a couple hours.
What about power outlets? They're going to come in and maybe charge their phone as well and not buy anything,
yeah,
and use the bathroom. And what if there are needles on the floor? I mean, they're going to have to start doing all kinds of stuff. That is,
well, coincidentally,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll work. And coincidentally, Seattle, you know, is passed the tax that is going to affect the 600 wealthiest businesses there only, Starbucks being one of them. And it's basically to also help the homeless and help with, you know, some of these welfare programs. And it'll be interesting to see some of these businesses that kind of like to virtue signal and say, we put things on our coffee cups that say, help everybody. Let's see how many of them stick around in the city of Seattle. Because suddenly you'll go, are you really a virtue signaler? Because you didn't want to pay the higher tax rate. You decided to move to a more business-friendly environment. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to survive. You want to survive.
Yeah, if you want to weigh in on this conversation, we'd love to hear from you because I find it interesting, and I know Patrick does too. Let's take a little break. When we come back, more with Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Be right back. It is positively Monday morning. If you're feeling it, it's for a very good reason. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I have on the studio line Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines.
Patrick, with an Earth, Wind, and Fire intro.
I know. How about that?
Oh, my.
Well, I was just going to eventually talk about what's going on in Hawaii with the lava, but that's where volcanoes are.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see where you're going. It's kind of weird. You know, it's such a distance away, but I love some of those pictures of these people kind of walking down the street going, pick up the pace. There's lava. come on, move it.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're one of those people.
I'm one of those people, and maybe the listener can weigh in on this as well. I'm sure you're like, I'm a three-block person. I have a three-block limit. Three-block limit. One person is allowed to block me up to three times in any given period of a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you're going down the aisle at the grocery store. It's like, okay, you're in my way, buddy. That's one. Then you're at the checkout stand, and he's the guy pulling out the checkbook that he hasn't pre-filled out, and you're going, that's two.
Right.
And then you're just trying to pull your car out, and there he is with his shopping cart, and he's driving down the middle of the lane. You're going, that's it. I'm out. I am no longer a friendly Christian.
Right.
You just violated my three-block limit.
Right.
I think I got about three blocks in me. What about you? Have you ever done more than three?
No, never. Never.
Yeah. Freeze it.
Now you've got me on the subject of people that write checks at checkout, but the checkbook's in the wallet until everything is rung up, and then they pull it out. It's like, no, you got to have it out and pre-filled.
Right. You don't know where you are?
You got bigger problems. Yeah.
You were just in line behind the last person that didn't have the check filled out.
Right.
You might have learned a lesson from that guy going, you know what? Maybe I could just write in here Bob's Groceries. And I could even put I always wonder, it's like you're even afraid to sign it as if putting your signature on it means that the guy behind you, i.e. me, is going to snag that check, run up the store because it's blank right now and say, wee, I just hit it big. I got a blank check.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
All right. What is this, this Children Fit for Life? This kind of caught my attention, and I thought, you're going to have something to say about this.
Yes. Leave it to the UK to figure things out,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So they've come up with this plan. They go, we've got this childhood obesity problem, and it seems to be getting worse. So they came up with this. You're going to say, gosh, in its simplicity, why didn't I think of this? For 15 minutes a day, they send the kids outside, you know, where the sun is, out of a building.
Uh-huh.
And they have them like run, run.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes up to a mile, and they're having this tremendous success. Now, I know what you're thinking. When we were kids, they called this recess. But evidently now and I'm sure somebody had to conduct a study and said, huh, these kids are getting bigger. What could we do?
Yeah.
You know, we noticed that they spend all day inside. Why don't we put them outside and let's have them move? Isn't this amazing? You remember when grandma used to say, you know, or mom or somebody, you know, somebody said it. I don't know who said it, but somebody did. But, you know, it's like, oh, you know, just eat a balanced diet, get plenty of exercise, walk, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so all these years later, you say, boy, is that not the secret to just a normal, regular, healthy lifestyle?
Right.
So simple. We make it so complicated.
Yeah, we do. All right. Issue fatigue. It's time for the issue fatigue time, which is Robert Mueller. How tired are you of that? Or do you want to talk about Hillary Clinton speaking at Yale? Pulling out the big Russian hat. If you can't beat them, join them. She's still talking about her failed presidential election.
Yeah. Well, you know something? You have to take it with a grain of salt, which is you're still not president. I don't think I have seen – I mean, Susan Lucci handled losing a lot better than Hillary Clinton. How many times did Susan Lucci lose?
Many.
Yeah, many. 15, 20 times. Finally, they say, just take one. Just take one. You had that acceptance speech in your pocket for 27 years. But, oh, gosh, it's ridiculous. And this whole Mueller thing, what I also love is this – I realize now, you know, that some people on the left, they like to call themselves progressives. And I realize it's because their storyline progresses. You know, we started a year ago when Trump said, I was wiretapped. And they said, oh, this is an outrage. Anybody who believes this is nuts. How dare he? And then, you know, that progressed to it's like, well, yeah. There was some wiretapping of people within the campaign, you know. And then you find out that the program was sort of this two-hop thing that you could – if you wiretapped one guy, you could then wiretap the people he talked to and wiretap the people they talked to. So you go, well, that kind of is 6 degrees of seven bacon wiretapping. So that means all of us have somehow or another be wired. So they go, yeah, well, it's okay. Then the storyline progressed to, you know, guys like John Brennan saying, you know, I really wish we would have wiretapped more. We should have done more of it. And then the recent thing last week between the Washington Post and the New York Times is – well, if they did wiretap, they did it to protect Trump, you see. So now they're saying, well, we were pretty fearful that the Russians were trying to infiltrate his campaign. So we were wiretapping to protect him. It's like, did you ever think of maybe calling up Donald Trump, personally saying, by the way, we think some bad guys are trying to, you know, infiltrate your campaign. No, instead, you said, don't tell them. Let's just wiretap everybody and see if it's happening. So I don't know where it goes next.
Yeah, and you were referring to why didn't they just call Donald Trump and tell him? You mean Donald Trump, private citizen, running for president?
Right. And I got a feeling, it's just my gut feeling, that because it's been progressing so much that it's going to get worse and we're going to, as people shift their narrative. But I'm also loving people saying, well, of course he was wiretapped, and that's a good thing. So they go, okay, I don't know how we got there, but... I guess that's our new stance, that is a good thing. So,
Yeah. Well, Patrick, travel safe today. I know you're on the road today, and I will talk to you later in the afternoon or tomorrow. And I will look forward to our chat again soon on the show.
All right. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Have a great day.
Next time.
Yep.
You too. Bye.
26 minutes after the hour. Let's take a little break and we'll come back, I think, with Ken Davis. And then we'll have some news. And then Dr. Adam Carrington is going to be with us. At about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. It is 30 minutes after the hour. I just tried typing in Melania on my phone, and it did correct to Melanie. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a little break for news. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Adam Carrington. It's also Senator Al Franken is his birthday today, 67. So happy birthday, Al. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington is just on deck. But before that, Leon Fontaine, he's a pastor and an author. He says, you can change your belief system based on what God tells us in the Bible. Let's hear his hope for today.
People who believe they're stupid because a teacher told them that, siblings told them that, or maybe, you know, an addict for a parent told them that. They will grow up believing that they are stupid. They're not as smart as others. That therefore, this belief will affect what they reach for, what they attempt, who they marry, who their friends are, how they look at their worldview, all because of one belief that is wrong. And when that belief gets changed by God's word, and it says that you are a son, a daughter of God, that you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you, as you believe that at the heart level, you begin to rise up and do things you would never attempt. And the other thing is that you begin to attract the things you believe. Job says in Job 3, he says, what I fear befalls me, and what I dread comes upon me. Because fear is the opposite of faith. So basically, Jesus said, according to your faith, so be it done unto you. What we believe, we begin to live it out. There's a consequence to right beliefs and wrong beliefs.
That's Leon Fontaine. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com and check it out. We'll take a little break and then return with Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College.
Mom and Dad, don't back away from being a parent. You aren't called to be a buddy to your child. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. Being mom or dad is one of the best names you could ever have. But don't assume you're going to be your child's best friend. That may come later in life, but not when you're dealing with young children, bringing them up in biblical values deliberately and intentionally. And a reminder, no is okay. Be quick to state it, be firm when you state it, back it up and support it, and reinforce it. Create a home where you can say no, and a home where you can turn around and say yes when it's appropriate. When Proverbs says, train up a child in the way he or she should go, that's what being a godly parent is all about. This is Jim Garlow. Get the details at jimgarlow.com and be prepared to live out your faith.
Big Hand is on the 37. My big guest is on the studio line, Dr. Adam Carrington, Professor of the Year at Hillsdale College, is my guest. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. Now, at the commencement at Hillsdale College commencement Saturday, Vice President Mike Pence spoke. Did you shake his hand, and have you washed your hands since?
I did not get to. I did get to almost rub elbows with him.
Okay.
I was in the color guard, and I mean that literally, not figuratively.
Okay.
I was in the color guard that walks out with the Hillsdale and the American flags, and he came out to get in line right before the address started, and walked right by me. I think I got a smile. So
yeah, what was the security detail like? I mean, to be in the middle of it. I mean, a vice president. What was it like?
It was intense. The woman who really is the point person for our for setting up the commencement year in and year out was pretty stressed. Although she did an amazing job. There was Secret Service everywhere. The stage that he sat on, we were not allowed to be on the stage unless we had security clearance, even the day before commencement.
Wow.
So it was pretty intense, but they did a very good job of getting people through security. Things went really smoothly, and you know, you asked if I got to shake his hand. the vice president's no, but I'll say a really nice thing he did, and this was a better choice than shaking my hand, is he actually shook the hand of and got a picture with all the graduates as they came across the stage one by one.
Oh, wow.
They had a photo, camera, well, photographer set mm-hmm. up to take a picture with each one. So every student got the chance to have their picture taken with the vice president shaking his hand. And I thought that was a really nice gesture. The one other person to do that since I've been here was Clarence Thomas 2 years ago. He didn't get a picture with everyone, but he also shook everyone's hand. So I thought that was a neat treat for the graduating seniors.
And how was the speech?
I thought it was pretty good. I was saying offline before I came on air, there's always a worry that you're going to have a stump speech rather than a commencement address. And I have nothing against stump speeches. It's just time and place. But I thought that in general, the vice president avoided that. He had a Hillsdale, alum as his speech writer. And I think that made it so that the speech said some good, interesting things. I think he talked about the importance of what we do at Hillsdale College, the importance of education for especially a popular government, and how he thinks that we and our students are contributing to the greater common good of the country. And mm-hmm. I think when he focused on those things, which he did for most of the speech, I thought it was a pretty solid job. It seemed to be pretty well received by the community and by the students here as well.
Adam, did he get any laughs?
He did get a few. Okay. One thing he said was he got, our president, President Arn, I thought, gave a very nice speech before him about the purposes of education, the purposes of what we do at Hillsdale, in, I think, a little more detail. And when the vice president got up, he said that his new note to himself was to never follow our president in giving a speech ever again. Just the respect he had for
that's
for
so sweet, really
yeah,
nice.
And we gave both the president, the vice president, and his wife honorary degrees, and I know she's been very involved in the education of young people that we wanted to honor. So it went well. I thought the school did an excellent job. I thought the vice president was very kind to come. So. I'm very happy for this senior class. They were a great group, and they sort of deserved, I think, this kind of send-off.
Mm-hmm. How do I get me one of them honorary degrees?
I was asked that by my in-laws, and I think it has to be one of two great things. Either join the Board of Trustees, or,
right.
Which normally means you've accomplished some great things, or I think a life in public service of some kind, broadly understood, whether education, public policy. So, get into the Radio Hall of Fame, and I think you're well on your way.
On my way. All right, I don't want to get – none of us want to get numb to another school shooting, but one happened on Friday, and it's hard to know what to say.
Right. It really is, and it's one of those things where – Your heart just breaks for the students, and I think one of the most heartbreaking things was one of the interviews done with one of the young women there, where she said, "I actually expected this to happen. I expected it to come here, and it was just a matter. I wasn't surprised. I was just afraid." And I think, whatever we think should be done, and that's, of course, a really prescient question, the fact that this is becoming ingrained into the psyche of 10, 11, 12-year-olds is, I think, an additional collateral damage, and extremely bad collateral damage for our young people, in addition to the horrific fact that many people lost their lives. I think a lot of young people are losing their innocence,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to speak to the magnitude of how tragic and disturbing that is, and what do we do to try to not just keep these things from happening as much as they do, and hopefully keep them from ever happening again, but what do we do to sort of repair souls that I think have been so deeply affected both in those schools and by other students that now almost feel like they might be walking each day to a disaster of that kind.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I know students now factor into their psyche where to sit in class to try to minimize if something happened.
Yeah, it's I think that just accentuates that point. I think that's a really good additional way to just say that they're that in some ways death has become too violent. Death has become too normal. Too much of a possibility to people that shouldn't have to worry about that. That shouldn't be something that they have to deal with. Violent death day to day, and I think that how that's going to affect their relationships with others, how that's going to affect their view toward society, their view toward what's possible with their lives, I think is really tragic. And I think you saw some of this even before, say in inner cities, for example, when mm-hmm. you talk to people have gone to that are outside of those communities to talk to students who say, I'm just trying to not get, be the victim of violence, on the streets, and then I get beat up in school for, similar ideas. The problems that the communities like that are having, it's only spreading, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Adam, do you sense with your students at Hillsdale that there is above average episodes of anxiety or loneliness with the kids, the students?
That's a great question. I think that I don't think above average.
Okay.
And I think part of it is, to get into some other troubling parts of how our society is struggling right now, I think we have a disproportionately high number of students that come from unbroken families mm-hmm. where the original biological birth parents are there,
mm-hmm.
where they have been very supportive of their kids, where they have given a lot to their kids and been able to. It's not that single parents don't try as well, but they've been in a much easier position, and I think that's created a certain amount of stability. At the same time, the lots of students here struggle with the desire to succeed, with the worry that with the economy, the economic changes, or worries that socially, are they going to find a spouse, all sorts of other things. So I think that there's certainly plenty of students who really struggle with what does it mean to be successful. And what must they do to be successful? But I don't think it's above average.
Okay.
I think that's due to that. So
yeah, maybe that wasn't the right way to set up the question. But it seems that when a student becomes disconnected, that's when they start to go off the radar. And then they're, like this kid was wearing trench coats to school, and everyone kind of, was suspicious of him a little bit, and he got bullied. And I thought, well, he's not connected. He's not connected in with other students. And, I always start to get concerned about this stage of life. Kids desperately need support and friendship and all of that. And when you're isolated, you start to get crazy.
Yeah, and we shouldn't mistake stuff for time. Sometimes we want to give students a lot of stuff, a lot of options to have an iPhone or a computer or a gaming system, but there's no substitute for giving your time, giving your personality, giving affection and care. And I think that is something that fighting that kind of loneliness is extremely important. And some of that is connected to what I said earlier about home. But I think that we really need to be very intentional about building up community and not letting people, fall off into the shadows. And you're right, this age can be a really difficult time. Other students can be cruel. People can overreact or misreact to slights. And I think that building a community of caring really does matter.
Yeah. Adam, let me take a break. When I come back, President Trump made a very controversial comment. We're going to discuss that with Adam Carrington, Professor of the Year at Hillsdale College. We'll be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington is my guest on the program. Adam, President Trump made a comment about MS-13, saying that these gang members were animals. Harsh language, appropriate, inappropriate.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think on one hand, I don't think we should categorize definitively any one person as non-human, regardless of how vicious or wicked they are. But I think, you know, in the moment, in unprepared remarks, I think, I think the point he was trying to get across is these people in these gangs are treating others in an animalistic fashion. They're mm-hmm. treating people the way no human being should act toward others.
Mm-hmm.
And while I maybe could quibble with exactly the way he put it, I think most Americans are going to, with good reason, look at that and say, if you have gang members who are perpetrating this kind of violence, this kind of torture on others, that are causing this kind of disruption among the lives of so many people, it takes someone who's really maybe not non-human, but has dehumanized themselves and their view of others and their treatment of others.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I could quibble with some of the language used, but I think the underlying assessment of how some of these gang members act toward people, toward others, and what they do to others is not it's not a huge stretch. I think it's a stretch, but it's not a terrible stretch.
Right. Well, it seems like we got a baby bust going in our country. Lowest recorded birth rate in 40 years. Is there political implications to this?
Well, I think so. And of course, political, social, other implications are all intertwined. I was teaching a class on the French political thinker Montesquieu, who was very influential in the American founding, and he talked about, if you have a baby bust, it's from one of two reasons normally. One is a natural disaster, you know, there's a plague or something. The other is a change in the values of the people. And he actually says that one is much harder to deal with. It's much harder to reverse. And I think it's pretty clear that that's what we're looking at is a change in our values. What people prioritize as far as having children. And I think that, the laws need to take that into account. Are there ways that we can encourage women that want to have children to be able to have them without feeling either social or economic pressure to the contrary?
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways that we can honor publicly those who make really a sacrifice to the community as a whole in creating, nurturing, educating the next generation of citizens? Can we really make those points of honor in ways that I don't think we have as much as we could have in the past? You know, I think the increasing the child tax credit in this mm-hmm. last tax bill is, you know, that's not going to automatically make a bunch of people go out and have more children, but it might be one way that the laws can be a helping hand in changing how much we value children and how much we value having more children. And I think that is a serious, serious economic and social problem going forward if we're not careful.
Mm-hmm. It seems that history does not always repeat itself, because I grew up with big families. There were so many big families in my neighborhood. You know, we had all these kids, and my neighbors had all these kids, and down the block, everyone had all these kids.
Yeah, my father was one of six.
Yeah.
And that was not abnormal.
Right. Now, how many siblings in your family, Adam?
Only one other. It was my brother and I. Now, my mother had some serious pregnancy health issues that actually had made them have fewer. I will say in Hillsdale, it's interesting. We're a little bit of a reverse of the trend. It's actually very normal to have five or six children here. And there's a real culture of valuing having children here that I think I really appreciate out of an educational institution.
Yeah.
But no, it, you know, you had the baby boom post-World War II, and I think at that point you still had the idea that families in many ways are the most fundamental social safety net.
Yeah.
They are the way that people take care of each other. And it's not that people didn't have children for other reasons. There was a pride and love and in wanting to have more children to support. But at the same time that, you know, families were the first community.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that maybe in our modern times we've lost a little bit.
Well, you're doing your part, you and your wife. Your little daughter's how old now?
She just turned a year.
Oh, fabulous.
So we're loving on her and hoping she has a good number of siblings later on too. Yeah.
Is your wife listening?
No, but she just said that our daughter definitely needs a sibling.
Okay.
Because, she's getting a little queen diva on us a little bit.
So. All right, Adam. Thanks so much. Have a great day and a great week.
You too. Thank you.
Yep. 3 minutes till the top of the hour. Let's take a little break and then wrap up hour one. Thanks to Dr. Adam Carrington, Patrick Albanese for great hour one. We have a great hour two coming up. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.